With the first pick in the 2003 NBA draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA draft,
with the third pick in the 2018 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the 1998 NBA draft,
with the first pick in the Orlando Magic,
Michael Olcandy.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.
Welcome to Robin Hoop, an NBA Draft show here on Dash Radio's Nothing Net channel, where we bring rich takes to the poorly informed. All right, we jump into this week's episode, and I got to tell you, you are not going to want to miss a minute of it. This is probably the biggest show that we've done as far as guests are concerned, so do not move your seat, do not change that dial, and make sure you keep it here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel, as this week we are jumping into the Florida State. Now, Florida State prospects, there are three of them that you really want to keep an eye on here in this draft class, and we are going to talk about all of them. The first one that we're going to touch on is the guy that, for most people, is ranked the highest, and that is going to be Devin Vassell. Now, when you look at Devin Vassell, there are many tools in his toolbox and many things to like as far as his game is concerned. To start off, when you watch Devin Vassell play, the one thing that really jumps out to me is how easily he plays the game. Very free-flowing. It doesn't look difficult what he does on the court. It's almost like smooth is a good word for it. When you watch him play, it's very different. Some prospects, I feel like you watch them, and it looks to me like they're giving more effort than they should be, if that makes sense. It's like an overexertion. And when you watch Devin, and it's not that he's not giving it 100%, because he definitely is, and he's a very hard worker, but that's just really what impresses me so much about him, is how he makes it look so simple, when we all know that it's not. And the difference between him and some of these other prospects is, you talk about how some prospects have one really good skill, or you talk about a prospect that has like maybe four or five okay skills, a guy that's pretty versatile, or has many feathers in his cap. When you look at Devin Vassell, what's very impressive about him is he's actually a master of more than one thing in more than one area, and that's what's really impressive. To start off, he is arguably the best team defender, off-ball defender in the entire class. When you watch him on the defensive end, I promise you, you will be impressed. There are so many games from this past season where, honestly, your jaw just drops when you're watching just how he controls the floor defensively when his man doesn't have the ball. Whether it's communicating with others, whether it's dropping back to make sure he's covering multiple players, he knows where he needs to be on the floor. It's very, very impressive. Now, that's not to say that he's a bad on-ball defender, because he's not. He's actually a decent on-ball defender as well, but that is not where I would say it's his strength. I think he's a decent on-ball defender, but there's room to improve on that aspect of his game. Now, in addition to defense, you want to look at offense for Devin, because when he shoots his shot, it's very interesting looking, first of all. So don't let that dissuade you. If you look at the history, as we will, of jump shooters, it's okay to have an interesting jump shot as long as it's consistent. And Devin has exactly that. Now, the one thing that you notice when you first watch him on the offensive end is when he shoots, it's very a very high release point, very unique. And it's weird. You always to me, I always say to myself, how did this prospect get to that point where that's how his jump shot kind of progresses? And you know what, though? It works for him. Whether it's the fact that it's high, whether it's repeatable, and there's lots of things to like just in terms of it's a tough shot to block. That's one thing that he has that I think separates him from a lot of players is his jump shot. It goes up. It's pretty much over his head in some aspects. It's very interesting, and it's consistent. Now, if we dive into the statistics, that's where he continues to shine. 94% as far as his overall offense, which is a very, very good, excellent rating. Just under 1.1 points per possession, which is good to see. If you break it down to transition and half court, in the transition, 94%, 1.411 points per possession. Clearly one of the best players in that aspect coming out of college. So if you're a team in the NBA and you want to push the basketball, this is the player for you. In addition, though, if you look at just the half court, 86%, just below 1 point per possession, so lots to like there. There's so many aspects of Devin Vassell's game that are going to translate so well, and whichever team ends up drafting him is going to get a very, very solid player. Now let's go further down the Devin Vassell statistical rabbit hole and really want to focus on one specific area of his offense, and not even just his offense, but specifically his shooting, and that's off ball. Now if you look up spot-up situations, he was very, very impressive. 80th percentile, which is good to see. He shot almost 42% from three, which is very cool and very impressive. He's in the 87th percent in terms of ranking when doing a catch and shoot, which is, I mean, fantastic. And if you end up with taking a look specifically at three-point jumpers, he's in the 92nd percentile. And these are very, very impressive in terms of point per possession. You're talking for the three-point shot, it's a little over 1 point per possession. And then, again, the catch and shoot, 1.22. Come on. Are you serious? What do you want from a guy? That's exactly what you want to see. And that's going to do a very good job in terms of transitioning from college to the – I think everything's going to translate. When it comes to his shooting, I really just – I don't sit here and have a lot of concerns. When he's open, I think it's a shot that's going to fall. The one area where I do start to have some question marks is creating his own shot. I do have question marks there, and that's going to be something that he's going to have to work on. And to be fair, there's been a long offseason. When college basketball ended, and then as we're, you know, obviously this whole time where we were during the pandemic, there's not a lot going on. These players are working hard. They're getting better. And so it could be that Devin Vassell's already working on that aspect of his game. And maybe in the pre-draft process, if there is some sort of pre-draft process, maybe we're going to be able to see something from there. But just in terms of off-ball and being a shooter, he's really good there, right? You look at that and you're fantastic. But when you add in things such as shooting off the dribble, trying to, you know, create space on his own to create shots, that just hasn't been something that he has really thrived in. And so I'd like to see that really change. Part of that, too, is while he's a decent athlete, when you watch him play, I wouldn't consider him to be a quick guy just in terms of, let's say, you know, the first step. He's not explosive. Those are things that I don't think you can really use when you look at Devin Vassell and you explain kind of what you're seeing from his game. And so those are things that maybe with time he can get a little better at there. But some things in terms of your, I guess, movement, there's not always a way to necessarily improve in some of those areas, especially when you talk about like an explosiveness. Some guys seem to have it, some guys don't. And at least right now, it's not something part of his game that I do see. Now, if you're drafting Devin Vassell, I think you have to be honest with what you're getting. You're getting a very versatile player when it comes to transition. You're getting a very versatile defender who's going to be able to be solid, not just in terms of off ball, but personally, I do think he's going to be decent off or on ball as well. And here's the thing. Sometimes he gets beat, and this is very similar to the next player we'll talk about, Patrick Williams, but he's athletic enough where he's able to get back into plays, and he's able to recover when he does get beat. Now, again, that's at college. When you jump into the NBA, that's a little more difficult because now you're talking about a lot of really good athletes and a lot of high IQ players. So it's not necessarily going to be something that he can continue to do. So it's one of those things where you want to watch it and you want to see how he's able to improve in certain areas, how he's able to transition in certain areas. But overall, definitely one of the best prospects in this class. And think about this. We haven't had basketball. I mean, aside from, let's say, Israeli League, most of these prospects, we have not been able to watch any sort of new game film. And so you really are nitpicking at a certain point. But at the same time, I think there are some prospects out there that have jumped up a little bit. There was a time where I think Devin Vassell was looked at as being like fringe top 10. At this point, I would argue that he's probably fringe top 5. And so he's a player that has definitely, in my eyes, benefited from this additional time that scouts, that draft experts, that people that are really into the draft and watching prospects have been able to gauge and get from watching more of him. Going through some of the other statistics, now, we talk about him being a very good defender. There's not much you can really dive into when you look at statistics. There's not much there. We talk about this almost every week, beating a dead horse at this point, so I'm not going to dive into that aspect of it. But there are some things I want to take a look. Just if you go to Synergy's website, for example, you can go through the cumulative box and you can look at the specific statistics for any player in college basketball if you have the Synergy package. And as we take a look here just at some of his specific statistics to him, and that we're not talking about shooting necessarily, we're not talking about percentiles, that sort of thing, just diving into the overall numbers. So again, 42% from three, very, very solid. Now, it's on 104 attempts, so it's not like it's necessarily a small sample size. You can definitely take something away from that. Very, very impressive, if you ask me. In addition, looking at his free throw shooting, that's a number that's interesting because it's not, I mean, 65 is not a ton. I don't sit here and say, all right, he's a guy that's going to get to the line a lot. He's going to be effective. 74% from the free throw line is not great, right? That's kind of the way I look at it, is it could be better, but only 65 attempts. And so it's one of those things where it's not a huge sample size. I mean, only 17 misses. That's not much. And so to me, let's boil it down this way. If you were shooting 10 free throws and you made 7 of them, and now granted, that's a really small sample size, but the point is 65 doesn't tell a huge story. He's a decent free throw shooter, and I do think, me personally, I do think he's probably going to be somewhere in the 80s, I think, when he's in the NBA. That's something that's probably going to transition. So we'll see how he moves on from there. You know, overall, in the as far as two-point shots, 53%, which is not bad considering the types of shots he is taking. And again, I think that number could be higher if it weren't for the fact that he does have some issues as far as creating his own shot, creating space. Those are things that, because he doesn't thrive, it brings that number down just a little bit. But ultimately, if you're an NBA team, you want to look at Devin Vassell and you want to draft this guy because he is going to be able to step in day one and help you in so many facets of basketball. And that's what's really impressive to me. The one thing that's interesting too is we talk about how he doesn't necessarily get a lot of space sometimes when he's like in isolation or when he's trying to create his own shot. But what's impressive is that he's still able to make a lot of those shots. So he is someone that has been able to have the ability to take really difficult shots and still make them. And a lot of that goes back to what we talked about earlier, and that's that release point on his jump shot, which is very high, and it's very tough to defend. So even if he's not able to develop a way to get better at that aspect of his game in terms of creating separation, creating his own shot, he's still effective enough where I do think he's going to be good at the next level in terms of being an offensive shot maker. So we'll see. But ultimately, when you jump to the NBA, you know, one thing people like to talk about is how the speed of the game changes. You have to make decisions quicker. So that's the only question mark that you really look at and say, all right, how is it going to translate? Because when all is said and done, now you're playing players with a much higher skill level. And sometimes just because you're athletic, for example, or just because you have a tough to defend shot, that does make it more difficult because now you're playing guys that are more on your level, as opposed to in college where you're playing guys from every, you know, skill level. I mean, it's a little different, obviously, than, you know, if you're playing in some of the lower college levels. But still, it's not as consistent. And when you get to the NBA, you're playing guys that are all really good talent, right? And that's how you get there. So we will see if he has any sort of cause for concern in that aspect of his game. But again, I personally think that he's going to thrive in enough areas where any NBA team would be very lucky to have a Devin Vassell join them in this draft class. Now let's take a look at our second prospect, and that is going to be Patrick Williams. Now, Patrick Williams is one of my favorite prospects in this draft class. I know I've said that a lot, but when you look at his skill set and the fact that he's the second youngest player in this class, there's a lot to like. Recently, I heard someone say that they felt he was a kind of a jack of all trades, like a master of no trades, which I think is crazy because if you watch him shoot, it is, as I like to put it, a work of art. He has such a good-looking jump shot. Now, could it be a little faster? Yes. But one thing that you watch when you watch him shoot is there's nothing extra. What I mean by extra is that there's some players when they shoot and they're kind of wasting portions of their mechanics that it's taking up excess time. I don't really necessarily see any wasted movement with him. And so that's one thing to watch for. I think he's going to ultimately be a very, very good shooter at the next level. Now, specifically looking at the three, only 50 attempts. He had 34 makes, a decent amount. 16 makes, 34 misses. So 32% overall, which not great, but not terrible. Some guys we're sitting here looking at their numbers, and we're going to talk about Trent Forrest a little later. And there's a guy that you really just don't trust as a shooter. I watch Patrick Williams, 32%, which is decent. But then let's jump to the free throw line. 84% from the free throw line, that's fantastic. And he actually has more attempts, not a large amount more, but he does have more attempts actually than Devin Vassell, 74 versus 65. So that kind of, to me, kind of sets the stage a little bit. And on top of that, he only has 12 misses. So he's been impressive from the free throw line. And people like to say that if you're going to determine whether a player can be good as a shooter at the next level, you look at his free throw shooting. Very good free throw shooter, decent three-point shooter. I look at him as someone that is going to continue to get better as a shooter, and he's already decent, especially, again, given his age. On top of that, he's a player that has pretty good size. He's not he's not a tiny guy. He is going to be able to have a good jump shot. On top of that, because of his the height and the size that he's working with, he's going to be able to play multiple positions. And I would actually say that he's going to be able to play multiple positions, not only on defense, but also on offense. And so when you look at, we talked about Devin Vassell and how he's going to be able to guard, let's say, 1 through 3. Patrick Williams has the potential. Again, I'm not saying he's going to be able to do it immediately. I'm not saying he's guaranteed to do it. But he has the potential, I think, to guard, based on matchups, 1 through 5. Again, based on matchups, I cannot say that enough. And this is one of the things you have to realize when you're talking about prospects. When you say based on matchups, for example, let's just look at this rookie class. I don't see Patrick Williams finding a way to necessarily guard James Wiseman, right? I mean, that would be a little tough. It's one of those things where do I think that he's going to be able to guard any number of true quality big men? I think that's going to be tougher. Now, granted, if he gets a little stronger, and he's already got some decent strength, so is it feasible to say that, yes, he could guard some of those centers down the road? Maybe. But ultimately, what it's going to mainly come down to is, in the modern NBA, a lot of teams are going with that small ball. You look at teams like the Rockets. In some instances, you look at a team like the Timberwolves. There's certain teams that are going with a more of a small ball look. And Patrick Williams, by the way, would be an excellent fit for a team like the Timberwolves. And if you're looking at teams that could use Patrick Williams, I mean, that list is basically everybody. I don't think there's a team out there that wouldn't benefit from having Patrick Williams on their roster. Whether he plays right away, that's going to determine on the team that takes him. That's where you kind of run into a little bit of an interesting dichotomy because for example, if a team in the top 10, which I do think it's realistic to see a team in the top 10 take a chance on Patrick Williams. There's some teams that could really use a lot of the skills that he possesses. And so if I'm a team sitting in the lottery and I'm kind of debating, what am I going to do? Am I going to take Patrick Williams? Am I going to take James Wiseman? Am I going to take Obi Toppin? I'm sorry, but I'm taking Patrick Williams every single day of the week. And to me, it's really not that close. Now, we haven't really gone into Obi Toppin and James Wiseman. So could that opinion change? I guess, but I don't see it changing. That's how high I am on Patrick Williams as a prospect. There's just so many things to like about him and his game. Now, one thing I'll say about him in terms of just intangibles, he's a very, very good athlete. Very good athlete. And so what he's shown to do is he's been able to recover very well on the defensive end. One thing that I've noticed watching him is that laterally he doesn't move really well. Sometimes he could have better footwork on the defensive end. So that's one thing to watch for. But like I said, he's able to recover. Now, when you get to the NBA, it's that much more difficult. The talent level is that much better. Everyone's a good athlete, right? Or most players are good athletes. There's things to watch when it comes to that. So it's going to be tougher for him to recover. But if you already add in the fact that he's a very smart defender and he's able to move well, and for the most part, he knows where he needs to be. Now we're going to add in the fact that he's, again, the second youngest player in this class. So it's not like he's a 23-year-old, right? He's not a 23-year-old senior coming out and you're saying, man, I have lots of question marks here. No, we're talking about a guy that's 19 years of age, just won the sixth man of the year award in the ACC, and he wasn't expected to do a whole lot. So to me, when you increase his usage rate and when you get him into an NBA system, I think he's going to improve tenfold. And now you're going to add in the NBA strength and conditioning programs that are going to be able to help him. You're talking about some of the best coaches in the world, depending on what team he goes to. They're going to help him with his footwork. They're going to help him with his mechanics on the defensive end and just putting him in a position to succeed. For me, I do think that he is going to be a very high-level defender, not just off-ball but on-ball. Sky is the limit, I think, for Patrick Williams. And again, we talk about the offensive side of things, and he has such a good-looking jump shot, and I cannot say enough about that. So impressed with that portion of his game. Now, let's jump into the specifics and take a look at some of the things that we talked about as far as his offensive game. There are a number of things we want to look at just in terms of his overall offense, and looking at some of his defensive statistics as well. So Patrick Williams averaged a block a game, so actually 30 blocks in 30 games played, which, I mean, I'll take that, especially given I do think he can get better in that aspect. If you look at some of the other things, he's actually, you know, shown to be an okay offensive rebounder. He averaged over one offensive rebound a game. I mean, it's not amazing, but I think it's decent. And then, you know, you look at his defensive rebounding, 77 defensive rebounds on the season, so a little over two per game. So now we're talking like, you know, not a huge, you know, jump off the page in terms of the rebounding statistics. So that's an area I do think he's probably going to need to improve in at least a little bit. You can kind of break it down like this. So per game, he averaged 9.2 points, but then a steal, a block, an assist, and four rebounds. One thing that's interesting to me is, I'm not going to say he's a great passer. One thing he's good at is he makes a really crisp pass. And so when he makes a pass, he puts some zing on it, which for anyone that watches, whether it's college, NBA, there's a lot of guys out there that are really lazy when it comes to that. So that's just something I kind of watched. I don't know that it necessarily tells us much of a story, but I don't know, something to keep an eye on there. And again, his usage rate in college is not high. I mean, we're only talking 7 field goal attempts a game. So very, very minimal. And that goes back to, you know, even three-pointers, under 2 a game. So we don't even have a large sample size there. Same with free throw attempts, under 3 free throw attempts a game. And so when his usage rate gets improved, I do think a lot of these statistics can go up. You know, if you actually look at his per 40, it tells a different story. Again, you got to be cautious when you're doing this whole, like, hey, what are his per 36 numbers? Well, what if a guy plays 5 minutes? I mean, that just doesn't translate well, right? So now we're talking about a player that plays 22 minutes a game, and we're going to expand that to 40 minutes. And again, you can look at these statistics on sportsreference.com. But if you just jump ahead to the per 40, just to get an idea of where he would sit, 16 points, 7 rebounds, basically, if we round up a little bit, 2 assists, 2 steals, and 2 blocks. I think you're going to take those numbers. You're going to take those numbers, especially when you account for the fact that, again, blocks and steals don't tell the whole story, although generally, if you're wondering about things that translate defensively, steals. Generally, steals do transfer from college to the NBA. So if he was able to get 2 steals a game, I mean, come on. You would take that in a heartbeat. And so there's a lot, and I'm telling you, a lot to like about Patrick Williams as a prospect. And this is why he's a player that I definitely think a lot of teams are going to target when we look at this draft class. I've heard a number of teams that people think that Patrick Williams would fit on. The Spurs have been a pretty popular name. You know, I personally want the Wolves to take a look at him, and I think he fits that toolsy 3/4 that they've been looking at to play next to Karl Towns, and that they just target in general when it comes to their scheme. Looking at some of the other teams that are out there, I think any number of these lottery teams could look to him and say, all right, I think he's going to fill or he's going to check a lot of boxes that we're looking for. So we'll see what happens with Patrick Williams, but there's a lot to like about his game, and I think any team in the NBA would be lucky to have him. If we dive just a little deeper, when you know we talked about Devin Vassell and how there's a number of things that he ranks very, very highly in, the same can't be said about Patrick Williams in a few different areas. You know, in the overall half court, you know, he's in the 72nd percentile, not great. Transition 17% in transition. Now, 44 possessions, not a giant sample size, but man, the 17th percentile is not exactly something that that gives you a ton of confidence. So that's one thing to keep an eye on. One thing he's proven to be pretty fantastic with basket cuts. So he's in the 88th percentile when it comes to basket cuts, and so I think in the modern NBA, especially, guys that understand when to cut, where to cut, spacing on the floor, those things are really, really, really nice. The one thing that's interesting, we talked about he's not great in transition. The area where he is decent in transition, actually, is as a ball handler. So if he's pushing it in transition as the ball handler, 94th percentile, small sample, 11 possessions, but still, if you watch him when he pushes it, and this is kind of how I look at it, there's a number of prospects, Jalen Smith, Paul Reed, there's a few other prospects that I think have that ability. And those guys probably are a little more seasoned than he is in that regard. But still, if you're talking about having some question marks about whether a young guy can do this, in the small sample that we have, he definitely can look to push the basketball. And as long as he continues what we saw in college, which is high IQ plays, I do think that this won't be a problem for him. And he's going to be able to continue the success. And he's going to, in my estimation, become an even better ball handler than he is now. I don't necessarily look at ball handling as a strength by any means, but I also don't think of it as a negative. So those are some interesting things to kind of take a look at when you're looking at his overall game. Interestingly, too, some other things and areas that he really succeeded in, and then areas where he did not, would be, you know, when he actually drives to the left and goes to try to take it to the basket, very, very poor. But when he drives to the left, settles for, or I guess not settles, but goes for that pull-up for the jumper, 96th percentile. Not huge sample sizes, but again, all you can do is be successful in what's put in front of you. And he did that in those specific instances. It's interesting, as an overall spot-up player, not good. I mean, really, really not good. But as we talked about him being a decent ball handler, he's in the 60th ranking as far as dribble jumpers. So, you know, those are things really to watch for as he transitions to the NBA. But overall, there's so many things to like about Patrick Williams' game. I'm very intrigued to see where he ends up going. That's really going to set the table for me. And we'll be able to tell a lot about what he's going to eventually end up bringing to the table based on the team he goes to. I think there are some teams that are going to be better fits. While I say that any team would love to have him, definitely there are some teams that are going to be better fits and are going to probably be able to help his growth sooner than later. And now let's jump into our last prospect of this show, and that's going to be Trent Forrest. And then after that, we jump into some high-level interviews that you are not going to want to miss. Remember, you're listening to Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel, and we are the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show. Remember, nothing but net, all basketball, all the time. So let's take a look now at Trent Forrest. Now, when you look at his game offensively, there's a lot of question marks. Defensively, though, he puts up some of the best statistics that we've seen in a long time. In fact, when you look at both his block rate and his steal rate, there's very few players that can even come close to him at that position, at that like at that guard position. Now, when you expand into all positions, there's some pretty big names that jump off that list, and one of which would be an example would be Paul George. So guys that were in college that were able to do the things that he could do on defense, it's a very short list. Now, the big difference between those, like some of these other players, and him is, number one, he's a very old prospect. Already 22, he is one of the older prospects in this draft class, and I do think that's going to hinder his ability to get drafted. I do. I think if he does get drafted, me personally, I do see him going late in the second round if he gets drafted. Now, if he doesn't get drafted, I think there are a lot of teams out there that could use a player with his skill set. The biggest question mark is going to be shooting. And as we talk about with one of our first guests, if you jump from college to the NBA, a lot of guys are bad at defense, right? Or that's an area where you say, all right, this guy's got to get better. But a lot of guys come into the NBA and they can shoot. But the one thing I'll say is a lot of guys can't go to the NBA and just become good defenders. It's much easier to become a good shooter than it is to become a good defender. Now, granted, with some of these prospects in this draft class, some of it's just will. Some of it's just effort. When you talk about Trent Forrest, I never question his effort. He is, by all accounts, a fantastic leader, a very smart player, and a very large reason why Florida State, let's just look at this past year, for example, he's a big reason why Florida State was one of the best teams in the country. You know, when that season ended, most people thought they were probably, at worst, probably going to be a two seed when we're talking about the NCAA tournament. And I think they would have been probably one of the favorites to win it all. That's a very talented basketball team. Trent Forrest was a big reason for that. Now, offensively, while I do think there are a lot of question marks, it wasn't like it was all bad. There were some areas of his game that were pretty impressive. He was able to show off a floater game, which was good to see. Jump shooting was definitely something that was not a large part of what you got with him on the offensive side. So when we look at, let's just say, for example, three-point shooting. Trent Forrest, three-point shooting, 29%. Not great. Now, it was 55 attempts. And it was 39 misses and 16 makes. So it's funny how the differences can be so close. Because we talked about Patrick Williams, 32%. And again, part of that difference and why, to me, 32% is a big difference from 29. Even though it doesn't seem like it, position matters to me. So Patrick Williams is one of those guys that's going to be more of like a 3-4, maybe 5 type guy. But if you're a guard, for the most part, guards need to be able to shoot, and 29% is not great. And so when he's in the game, I mean, think about that. Only 16 makes, 55 attempts. First of all, 55 attempts is very low. Not a lot of attempts. And we're talking about, for example, there's some players that probably, in fact, I can't think of a specific player in this instance, but some players in one single year will shoot more three-point shots than Trent Forrest shot in his entire career at Florida State. It's just not a big part of his game. Now, if we look at free throw rate, or free throws, 101 free throws, so he's able to get to the line, which is impressive. 83 makes, 83% from the free throw line, which is solid. So to me, there's maybe something there. His free throw shot is a little goofy looking. Again, it's pretty consistent. But it's a little goofy, and I can understand why it doesn't translate well to the three-point line. So he's going to have to put in the work there. But like we talked about earlier, very solid defender. Very solid defender. And part of the issue, I think, with him is, again, he has a good floater game, but he, you know, we look at Trent Forrest, he definitely still needs to be better on the offensive end. There's room to improve. I would say when you looked at this past season, when you saw his usage rate go up, you know what else went up? His turnovers. I don't think he's a fantastic passer necessarily. He's an okay passer. He's a good passer. But again, when I look at offense, I don't see as many strengths as I do see weaknesses. And that's where he's going to have to get better if he's going to be effective at the next level. Just to go over his overall like per-game statistics, so he averaged 11.6 points, which is a career high for him in the 4 years he was at Florida State. That is second on the team. Now we're talking 4.4 rebounds, third on the team, 4 assists per game, which is first, and then a career high tying 1.9 steals, which again is first. He's also, as you'll learn when we interview our first guest this week, which is Leonard Hamilton, the coach, head coach of Florida State, who talks about he is the winningest player in Florida State basketball history. On top of that, if you look at his ability to score in high school, over 3,000 points. So it's not that he can't score. You know, you have that jump in level of competition when you go from high school to college. Now it's going to be an even bigger jump from college into the pros. What I look for a team to do is either take him at the end of the second round. And again, a lot of it's going to depend on what you have available. For example, I saw someone recently that did a mock draft, and they ended up with trades and things like that. They had the 47th and the 50th pick, and they weren't sure what to do. And what I said to that person is, when you're sitting there and you've already had, let's say, a couple guys that you've drafted, or maybe even 3 or 4 guys that you've drafted, which was his case in this mock scenario, where they were playing out kind of a mock NBA, just in terms of a little bit of an offseason and then the draft itself. And what I explained to him is, I said, when you're at the end of that second round, it's very similar to what you see teams do in football. When you'll see, like in the NFL draft, sometimes teams will look to amass 7th round picks because they say to themselves, here's the deal. There's a number of guys that I say to myself, I would love to get as unrestricted free agents. Well, why don't I grab 7th round picks and just ensure that I get those guys? Well, in the NBA, 2nd round picks don't have guaranteed contracts. And so if you can get end of the second, some of those picks can be used as players that you foresee, look, I want to grab this guy. I don't really know what exactly I expect from him, but I want to be the team that gets to negotiate with him, and I want to be able to, say, offer him, let's say, a low-money, non-guaranteed multi-year deal. Maybe I want to make this guy a two-way prospect. To me, that's where Trent Forrest really falls in line, and that's what I think a team is going to look to do with him, and that could be really successful because think about this. He's one of the best defenders in this class. I mean, that's the stats back it up. The eye test backs it up. On top of that, he's a leader. Those are the things that you're getting with Trent Forrest. And here's the thing. Let's say he doesn't pan out, but if he can help you develop other players in your G League system by just being a very high IQ, very confident player at that level, that's huge. Now let's look at it this way. You've grabbed him low risk at the end of the second round or as an undrafted free agent, which I think in the end could be more likely as far as where I think he's going to actually end up going. But either way, you grab him. And now you're going to grab a guy that's, to me, is going to be a surefire defensive player. He's got pretty good physicals, decent wingspan, and we already talked about his block rate and his steal rate. He's going to be effective in that aspect. And now you're saying to yourself, all right, what if I can just find a way to get him to be a decent shooter? And we're not even talking, like, let's make him be a 40% shooter. What if you could get Trent Forrest to be, like, you know, 35%? You know, maybe just a little lower than league average. Wouldn't you take that? And then you add it into his defense. And now you're talking about a player that's very, very, very effective in the role that you're asking him to be. That's a guy that could be in the league for years as a backup. So that's what you're looking at, I think, for a guy like Trent Forrest. There are some options, and I think there are some doors that he could potentially open, just depending on what a team thinks they can mold him into or they can use him into. Regardless, to me, if I'm a betting man, I think a team's going to take a chance on Trent Forrest as a two-way prospect, and I think it's going to pan out in some way, shape, or form, whether that's just in terms of helping with the development of other players in your G League system or maybe even your pro system, depending on how long he is with the pro program. There's just going to be ways that a team can benefit from drafting or grabbing Trent Forrest as an undrafted free agent. So with that, we are going to now jump into our interviews. Again, you're listening to Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. And do not go anywhere, as up next, we have an interview with Florida State head coach Leonard Hamilton. Welcome back to the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show, where now we are joined by the perfect person to talk about Florida State basketball and their prospects, head coach for Florida State, Leonard Hamilton. Coach, thanks for joining us this week.
Well, thank you very much for having us.
Now, let me start by talking Florida State as a program and a team, because what you have been able to do there has been very impressive. So impressive, earlier this year, you were ranked as one of the top coaching hires of the last 25 years. So to go over just a few stats, 5 straight 20-plus win seasons, 12 of the last 15 seasons, you've had 20-plus wins. And then if you look at just in general, looking at the ACC, you know, you're fourth winningest program in the ACC since 05-06, which is very, very impressive. And you're in very elite company there. And 55-13 overall in the last two seasons, and a very, very impressive 2020 season. What has it been like, you know, with this team having so much success?
Well, we just kind of stay focused. You know, we in a conference that has the probably the number one basketball conference ever assembled in the history of college basketball. I mean, you got the third winningest program in the history of college basketball in Carolina, the fourth in Duke, the fifth in Syracuse, the ninth in Notre Dame, the 14th in Louisville, and North Carolina State. I think he's 25. Just about everybody else has been to the Final Four, the Elite Eight, and it's just unbelievable coaches with several Hall of Fame guys in it. So you're in a dogfight. So you can't worry about accolades. You can't worry about trophies and awards. You got to stay focused, in order to be competitive in our business. So we just stay focused and stay grounded and realize that we're trying to carve out our own little niche of respect in the greatest conference ever assembled, and we just take it one year at a time, one game at a time, one practice at a time, and that's how our approach has been. And it's good that we are progressing and competing at the highest level, but this is the kind of league that if you take your foot off the gas, you get sent home with your hat in your hand with a sad face. So we're just trying to stay focused and continue to keep getting better. And we seem like we always got somebody ahead of us, something that we can shoot for, some goal that's out there for us to accomplish so we can't ever rest.
Yeah, I like the idea. Well, first of all, I agree. Definitely, for my money, the strongest conference out there, especially in terms of basketball. And I like what you talked about there. It's you never want to settle for wherever you're at. You always want to find another plateau to reach. And I feel like you've really been able to do that at Florida State. What do you feel like has been a big part of what you've been able to build as a program? You know, when I look at the three prospects we're going to talk about today, for example, very high-level defensive prospects. Would you say that's a really big part of what you think it takes to win in the ACC?
Well, it takes that to win anywhere. See, I've been fortunate enough. My first head job was in the Big Eight, the old Big Eight, with Kansas and Oklahoma, Billy Tubbs and Larry Brown and Roy Williams and those guys. It just doesn't get any better than that. And so then I joined go to the Big East with John Thompson, and Calissimo, and Conseca and Calhoun and Massimino, some of the greatest Hall of Fame type coaches. So I was I took over a program in Oklahoma State that needed to be fixed up, and in Miami, they didn't have basketball for 13 years, and they came back as an independent. You know, I wasn't foolish enough to think that I was going to have Syracuse and St. John's and Georgetown talent. So I had to find a way to compete with those guys when they were already well-established programs. And so what can we physically do? So we wanted to do what we physically do, that's play hard, defend, and play unselfish. That's how we built our program. Now, as we have gotten more successful over the years with that philosophy, we've improved offensively, but we've always kept our focus on defense, playing hard, and playing unselfish. And now as we've gotten more successful and we've been able to be much more aggressive offensively, it seems to be coming together, and a lot of youngsters are coming in and realizing in our past we've had to take youngsters and develop them. So we still with the same philosophy, playing hard, defending, playing unselfish. Now we have, and we've had to work hard to develop, so now we're getting a little better skill, talented player with the same work ethic and the same teaching and development from a skill standpoint, and we are seen to be able to compete a lot better. But don't get it twisted. I'm never going to have the talent on my team that some of the guys have. So we take a guy like Devin, a guy like Patrick, a guy like Trent, and those guys have improved immensely every year. Then I think that's one reason why our program has been able to be as competitive as we have over the last number of years.
Yeah, and I think that's a good segue into those three players. They are our focus this week, as you mentioned. So Devin Vassell, Patrick Williams, and Trent Forrest. Now, since 2010, 9 players have been drafted from FSU, and soon that could be 12. What does a team get when they draft a player coming from your team?
Well, I think it just gives us, you know, it raises, brings attention to our program that we're bringing in youngsters who maybe aren't household names coming out of high school, but at the end of the year, our kids are transitioning to the next level as well as anybody. And I think people recognize that we're doing a really, really good job of developing. A lot of this because I have the best basketball staff in America. My guys are really, really good. Stan Jones been with me about 25 years. Charlton Young, I recruited out of high school, and he's been around the ACC. Steve Smith, that we hired from Clemson last year, a great family man who care about players. Mike Bradley, my weight training conditioning coach, been with me 21 years. I mean, so I'm surrounded by loyal people who we all sing out of the same hymn book. We all in step. We got a great passion for what we do. We understand our system. We understand what works for us. And we're all on the same page. I think that's one of the reasons why we're able to be as competitive and consistent as we've been.
Yeah, you know, you touched on having a really good staff. And I do think when you have more veteran players on your team, such as Trent Forrest, they're in that system for longer. They're able to better understand what you guys are trying to get the team to do, and they can help some of those younger players. So I would guess in some ways, Trent would be one of your biggest losses after the season, because you're not going to lose just his skill, but that veteran leadership as well. What has Trent meant to your team over these last 4 seasons?
Well, just so you know, Trent is the all-time winningest basketball player in the history of Florida State. There's been a lot of guys come through here. He has won more games than anybody who's ever attended Florida State. You know, all the way back to Bobby Searle and Cassell and George McLeod and all the other guys, he has won more games. And he's been instrumental. Trent scored 3,000 points in high school. He's a workaholic. I mean, even in 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th grade, he'd be up in the morning running out in the street with his parachute on before his mother even got out of bed. He just is one of those guys who hard-nosed, tough, competitive, and he has the highest basketball IQ going. I mean, otherwise, he's here for only 4 years, and he just about completed his master's degree as he's leaving. He's just that bright, that sharp, but he believes in himself. Now, he scored 3,000 points in high school, and they say he's not a real good jump shooter. He made great decisions with the ball. Now he's shooting the ball better, making good decisions. He's a leader. So he comes into our program leading and guiding us as a point guard, and sometimes he might not score any points till the game is on the line, and then he scored 10 of the last 12 points, and we win the game. The ball's always in his hand when the game, the clock is running down, and I don't think he's ever had the ball in his hand and when the game's on the line, but he didn't come through. Under his watch, we have won 10 straight overtime games. Let me repeat that. With Trent Forrest running our team, we, Florida State Seminoles, have won 10 straight overtime games. A lot of this because of Trent Forrest. I think we're 68-3 at home over the last how many years. That's Trent Forrest. He has a lot to do with that. And I think we lack 39-8 or 39 in games decided by one possession. Trent Forrest. I mean, nobody has that kind of stat. That just shows you he's a winner in every true sense of the word. He never gets rattled. He plays his pace. He gives you whatever you need for you to win. There's no question we're going to miss him. He's a very talented youngster, but his basketball IQ, his ability to lead, make decisions when the game's on the line, step up, make the big free throws, finish the baskets, make the right pass. I mean, that's something that I've been spoiled on, and we're going to miss him very much.
Yeah, you make a really good point, and I don't think it can be understated how important it is to be a smart basketball player. And you mentioned how some people have talked about maybe they don't trust his shooting that much, but he brings so much to the table on the court. Like you mentioned, in terms of leadership, in terms of being able to just make the right decisions. And some guys are made for big moments, some guys aren't. And he's obviously proven, whether it be in high school, whether it be with you guys at Florida State, that he can play at that high level when it really matters. And that's what really can set him apart, in my estimation, from some other players that really haven't shown that in their careers. What, when you look at how hard he works, you touched on that, do you trust his ability at the next level to, let's say, if we're touching on his shooting question marks, do you trust that he's going to be able to get that to a level where maybe some people are a little more comfortable?
Well, let me say this to you. That's one area that it appears that a lot of guys improve when they get to the NBA. But those other intangible things that he brings to a team, those things are hard to come by. And so one thing you can improve your shooting, and he it's not like he's not a bad shooter, but he elected to run the team, get everybody involved, and do what he needed to do for us to win. Now, you got to decide, you want a guy who can hold. Now, there are plenty of guys can shoot, but it's not very many guys can say that in their career they lost 3 games at home in 4 years, that they won 10 straight overtime games, and they're 39-8 on games decided by 1 point or less, and he's the man who orchestrated. You find me another point guard in the country with those statistics, and I want to see him. And on top of that, whenever, if you go back and check the stats, whenever he played against a guard who's supposed to have been a big-time guard, look at his stats. You see what kind of competitor he is, what kind of winner he is. I can't say enough about Trent Forrest. Somebody going to get them a gym. He's going to be in the league for 15 years.
You love to hear it, and I honestly hope that that's the case. I think a team could really use a player like him. I mean, any team could really use a veteran presence, a player that just understands the game of basketball, like Trent Forrest showed during his time at Florida State. Now, you touched on how incredibly intelligent he is on the basketball court and what a high IQ he plays with. When I look at both your other players, Devin and Patrick, I really see that same thing. And what really impresses me, you know, Patrick is going to come into this draft class. He's the second youngest player that's set to be drafted. And I think it's really impressive how much we've seen from him, even just his 1 year at Florida State.
Well, he is a phenomenal athlete with great physical attributes, great hands. He has a matured body coming in the door. He has a calmness about him. But the thing that's the strength of Pat's game is that he's someone else has said that, you know, a guy who understands who he is, you know, he realizes that he's young. He realizes that he's learning. And his whole attitude coming in as a freshman, he wanted to make sure that he played good defense and that he played extremely hard. Now, his talents allowed him to perform at a high level. So he didn't take any plays off. He's humble. He's hardworking. He's confident. He doesn't play with an ego. He just plays to win. And, you know, it's interesting that guys who go to the offensive board always seem to be tipping the ball in by themselves. You know, whenever we need the offensive putback, he's always there to tip it in. And like, he's had that sixth sense. Whenever he led us in block shots. Come on, as a freshman, he's almost come out of nowhere, you know, to block shots when we had to have blocks. He came out of the dribble. He shot the ball well for us in big games. He started out a little slow, just like most freshmen do. But at the end of the year, he was always in the game when the game was on the line. And he's just starting. He just scratched the surface of his potential. As young as he is, I think what he brings to the table is his attitude, his competitive spirit, his coach ability to be coached, his guy who follows direction. And he's a team guy. He will give you whatever you ask him to. Defense, rebounding, blocking shot. And he's a very humble guy who's extremely coachable.
You know, it's really impressive. You mentioned how he's a good shooter. And I could watch him shoot jump shots all day. I know he didn't necessarily focus on that during his time at FSU, but you know, when I watch him play, there's some guys in the draft that you have him shoot and it's just, it's so pretty. And with him, I could watch that all day. I just think he's someone that really understands that aspect of his game. And can you touch on that a little bit? Just watching him on that aspect, I just think he's a really, really fantastic jump shooter. And I think that's going to really expand once he gets to the NBA.
Well, he developed his stats maybe not as good as they would have been had he didn't have the regular freshman adjustment period. And if he had another year with us, he'd probably be shooting close to 40% from three. Devin Vassell shot 22% from three in high school, but in our system, he shot 41 and 42% 2 years in a row. You know, so that shows a little bit about our coaching staff's ability, you know, to develop. But Patrick came under that same tutelage, and he started off a little slow, but there were many, many big games where he hit those jump shots. You can't leave him open, that's for sure. And he has a deadly 1-2 dribble pull-up that really – and you can't give him to a crack getting to the basket. He got those big old hands, and he really, really – I don't know what kind of vertical he got, but it's special. He jump over top of it.
Yeah, he's a fantastic athlete. And you add that to the other skills that he shows on the basketball court, whether it's rebounding, defense, offense, you add that athleticism. And I just think the sky's the limit for him when he gets to that next level. And like you mentioned, he's just a freshman. He's very, very young. And so he's going to just continue to improve. One thing that really sets him apart, I think, from a lot of those, like let's say forwards or bigger players, is he's a good free throw shooter too. When he goes to the line, I feel pretty confident he's going to make that. And you can't always say that about a lot of these younger prospects or these bigger prospects.
Well, he is right at 6'8". And that's the way the NBA game has gone. You know, the days when you used to get a 6'9", 6'10", power forward who was kind of like a big old strong enforcer who was physical and banging. The game has changed. He's 6'8", with, I don't know, probably as close to 40-inch vertical as you can get. I wouldn't be surprised if it's about 37, 38, somewhere like that. But he's mobile. He can dribble left, dribble right, finish left, finish right, shoot the three, shoot the pull-up, and attack the basket. No longer do you see one-dimensional players out on the court unless he's a phenomenal shooter. So Patrick can guard anybody 1-5. He's strong enough to front the post the way we do. We switch 1-5. He's quick enough to break down and contain a point guard. He's big enough and strong enough to force to front the post, which they don't do a lot in the NBA, to be physical with the guys down low, weighing about, 225, 30 pounds.
Yeah, and that's a big thing that you mentioned, being able to guard multiple positions. The NBA in today's game, the modern NBA, is so much more about switchability and being able to guard multiple positions or even play multiple positions. And I think both Patrick and Devin have shown that they're versatile enough to be able to do that at the next level.
Well, the theme of our program is, like I told you, you know, you play hard, you defend, you play unselfish. Now, that gets you on the basketball court. And if you got some offensive ability, because our kids play unselfish, they always seem to be able to perform well. So I got to understand. But we do switch 1-5, similar to what they do in the NBA. And I think that also gives them a leg up because that's what they've been doing in our system defensively. And we take great pride in how we defend on a consistent basis. And these guys will definitely come into the league with a defensive mentality.
So I would say one of the hottest prospects coming into this draft class, just the name that continues to be the talk of the NBA draft scene, is Devin Vassell. Tell me, what is it that really makes him so special?
Devin is such a high character youngster. He's a sponge. He's unselfish. He is a hard worker. He's a fast learner. He's determined to be a complete player. He kind of gives you whatever you need to win. What separates him, he's extremely confident. And he's a youngster. Like I said, he shot a very low percentage in high school from three, but he put the time and effort in, and he's extremely confident. He's a guy that you want taking that shot when the game's on the line. I think he's very similar to Thompson, who plays for Golden State. I went back, I think Thompson, as a junior in Washington State, I think shot somewhere like a 41, right around 41, 42 percent from three. And I think he's one of the more phenomenal shooters in the NBA. Well, that's who I think, who I compare him to, because he has that ability to knock down open looks. Now, Devin can put it on the floor, can make a play, but if he's on a team that with someone who's getting in the ball, he's not going to miss very many wide open jump shots, which you don't get very many wide open jump shots in the NBA because the defense is at a whole other level. But because he's versatile enough, I think that he'll be able to make a contribution to anybody's team early.
Yeah, he's good enough in terms of not only shooting, being able to move. I think without the basketball, he's proven to be a very good cutter. But on defense as well, there's so many aspects of his game that translate that I agree he's going to be able to jump in and help an NBA team immediately and make a pretty big impact on the floor. And that's a good question, too. When we look at him, not just offensively, but defensively, he's one of the better prospects I've seen in terms of knowing where to be on the court. Not just on ball, but his off-ball defense and his team defense was incredibly good in the games that I saw this year.
High basketball IQ, knows where he's supposed to be, has great instinct. He knows he plays to win. He rotates good. He picks up guys who have been beaten. He's always talking, always communicating. He's a very special guy. I'm excited for him and the career in his future.
So let me kind of end it with this as we are still talking with head coach of Florida State, Leonard Hamilton, here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. Now, you obviously are losing these three players, and that's obviously going to hurt. But when you look ahead to Florida State basketball, what do you have on the horizon? You've got some good players coming in, Scotty Barnes, Sadar Calhoun, Quincy Ballard. You've got some good pieces that you're going to add to the team you have right now. We don't obviously know what's going to happen given the pandemic as far as the basketball season, but what does the future hold for Florida State as a program?
Well, if you go back and look at what has happened to our program the last 5 or 6 years, every year we've gotten better, and we've lost players from Beasley to Bacon to Isaac, we lost those kids, and we've gotten better and better and better. I think because of the great staff we have guys developing. And each one of our returning players have shown that they are ready to step in where the other guys have moved on from. Michael Polite, MJ Walker, Raquan Gray, Malik Osmond, Balsa, Raquan Evans. I think Wyatt Wilkes. Those guys are really, really have worked hard over the summer and the spring. And I expect us to be just as good or better than we were last year. I expect that. I was on a talk show earlier and we were joking around. I said, everyone thinks that the Seminoles might be dying because we're losing three guys, I think, that's going to get drafted and a fifth-year senior. I told them, the Seminoles don't die, we multiply. we just keep coming on. And I like our team. And where we are, and the attitude, and the culture that we've been able to develop, so I expect these guys now to step into the shoes that these other guys have left, and I expect us to be better, and be a team to be reckoned with in the ACC.
Well, you love to hear it, and that message is exactly what you want to send. You don't want the players coming in going, all right, well, we lost these two guys. What are we going to do now? No, you got guys that are coming back that are really talented. You're bringing in some good young underclassmen. And obviously you want to continue to have that success that you've had recently. And I don't see any reason why you can't, just the way that you coach and the way that your players play. Hope the best for Florida State going forward. And hopefully there is going to be some sort of a season, and we'll see where it goes from there. So thank you again for joining us, Coach. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, welcome back to the Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show on Dash Radio's Nothing Minute channel. And do not even think of changing the station, as now we are joined by Derek Murray, the director of scouting for Babcock Hoops and a must follow when it comes to draft coverage. Derek, thanks for joining us this week.
Yeah, no problem. I appreciate you having me on the show. Always enjoy talking hoops, talking draft. So grateful that you've had me on.
And this week, the focus is Florida State prospects, and I want to start by talking about the one who, by all accounts, is going to go the highest in the draft, and that is Devin Vassell. Now, Devin has a lot of strengths, and one of the major ones is, of course, his off-ball or his team defense. How good do you think he can really be in this area as he transitions to the NBA? And do you believe he could be solid on the ball as well? Because that was an area that he was a little more hit or miss in college.
So I think he is, without a doubt, the best team and off-ball defender in the 2020 draft class. Just extremely high activity, fantastic basketball IQ and feel for the game, communication as a teammate, versatile with his length and athleticism. I just think his ability from a team defensive standpoint to hinder the offense's ability to kind of get into even some of their sets, you know, is just really, really impressive. On the ball, he's one of the better ones in the class. I think Okoro and Josh Green might be better than him in this class on the ball. But he has all the tools to be an excellent on-ball defender as well. I really would like him to study what Mikal Bridges did for Phoenix inside the bubble. I think that's kind of what you're looking at as a prospect. And I'd love to see him kind of tool his defense after what Mikal has been doing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good comparison. You know, sometimes when you're looking at draft prospects, people like to have these lofty guys they think of. You know, all of a sudden they'll throw out like a Hall of Famer. Well, if you're being more realistic, I think Mikal Bridges is a great guy to really look at. And like you said, model his game. If he can do that, I think the sky's the limit for Devin. There's just so many skills that he possesses. Now, he has many strengths. And if we look at one thing, he has, to me, kind of an interesting form on his jump shot. The bonus with this, though, is that his release is very high, almost like above his head. So it's obviously tougher to block. Are teams going to look to change that, you think, or will they like how consistent and effective it is?
I don't think you're going to see a developmental system try to change the mechanics on his jump shot because, A, it is just, like, to your point, it's so high. And also, it does work. I mean, he hit shots at a high rate. He was a 87th percentile catch and shooter. Per synergy, he was, 80th percentile as a spot-up shooter. And from the three-point line, he shot 41.5% this year. To me, those are the kind of numbers where I don't necessarily mess with it because it's working. And I'm a huge fan of his release point. I mean, just extremely difficult to block because it is so high over his head. If the numbers ever begin to drop, you know, then that becomes a different discussion. But I think you'll see a team tweak more of his ability and mechanics as a pull-up shooter than anything else. As a freshman, he didn't really display the ability to pull up out of a pick and roll or even isolation to hit his own shots. And that was a big point moving forward as a sophomore. It's like, let's see if Vassell can do this. And then in the Pittsburgh game, for anybody who wants to go back and watch that, FSU versus Pitt early in the season, they come out in the second half and it's just multiple possessions in a row of Vassell hitting pull-up shots. And it was just beautiful. So while it's not a big part of his game, I think that's actually the part of his shooting that a team will want to develop and potentially tweak more than the mechanics themselves.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And the pull-up game, it's interesting. It's not a big part of his game, but almost any game that you watch, he does attempt a few of those. And I wouldn't call it a negative, but it's not a strength. Like, it's not something he goes to it and you say, all right, this is probably going to go in. But I like that he's willing to do it, and I like that we've seen him improve from year one to year two. So you definitely can see down the line, if a team works them a little bit, that's an area that he can maybe go to a little more and be successful, which is what you want to see. Now, what really impressed me with Devin is, to me, he's a very unique prospect because not only does he have a high ceiling, but he comes in and he can contribute, I think, day one. So when you look at him, how good can Devin be? And do you think he's going to be one of those players that can maximize that potential, or is he going to hit more of like a middle outcome?
I think that he's one of those guys who's going to maximize his potential, but because of the lack of self-creation and, you know, on-ball offense, I don't know how high that ceiling is. You draft Vassell because he can be the ultimate role player, your ultimate elite 3-and-D guy if he really hits. But he's never going to be like the number one or two, maybe even third option as an offensive player on a contender. That's just not going to be his game. I think a lot of, not a comparison, but the role that you see like Covington play for Houston right now. I just need you to be a lockdown defender. I need you to communicate, be a high field guy, make the plays when you are able to make them and in that position. And then when you're given the ball at the three-point line, hit the shot. And although that's not the most glamorous position, you know, Covington's not getting all the interviews after the game, but the value is there. They traded for him for a reason. And that's the kind of value that I think that Vassell can give you. I don't think he's going to be a hit his floor and then just stay stagnant his whole career. I think he's going to hit. I mean, I would want to say that he's going to hit a ceiling. You root for that for every player. But I think his work ethic, you know, he's regarded highly as a teammate as well. So I trust his ability to improve even year to year at the NBA level.
Yep, I think that's very fair. Work ethic is one of those things where in many cases, you kind of either have it or you don't. And it's very clear that he does have it because you're able to see the improvements year to year. And even sometimes game to game, you'll see things where you're like, that last game, this is an issue I saw. And all of a sudden, you're seeing it as more of a strength, which is good to see. And I'm with you. I do think he's definitely going to be one of those players that has a very good shot to hit that higher ceiling. And you mentioned a guy like Robert Covington. Almost every team that's successful has a guy that has a role like that, that's going to be hitting shots when we need you to and make good decisions and play tough defense. And that's exactly what Vassell's going to bring to any NBA team that he goes to. Now,
right.
On the surface, Devin has a very diverse skill set. We've talked about some of those strengths, and he's a very complete player. But that being said, what are some concerns that you have about him as he transfers to the NBA?
I think the on-ball, you know, live dribbling, just creating for himself, ball handling in traffic, that is a concern for me right now. You know, he can create advantages as far as getting around people. He's such a high IQ cutter and with feel for the game that he finds the space, he finds the open lane to get to the rim. It's when he has to put the ball on the ground that the confidence goes away a little bit. Like, I would want him primarily on the perimeter as far as the offensive part of his game. He also gets blocked more than I would like him to. He's not an elite athlete in traffic. You know, obviously he's very bouncy with great feet and great hips, but just straight vertical pop, you know, it's not an elite level, but I don't think he's going to have that to hit his potential. But those are two things that pop up for me when I watch.
Yeah. The one thing that's interesting to me is when he plays, it's tougher to see the flaws in his game because he plays so in control and he always looks so comfortable out there and he looks really easy when he does stuff. I don't, you know, some guys when they play, you watch them and it looks like it's hard and it looks like they're having to put in more effort, and he's just really easygoing and free flowing. I think that makes it simpler when you watch him play. But you're right. I think those are some areas where there's definitely not a red flag, but just areas where you kind of have a little bit of pause as he transitions into the NBA. Now, looking at the NBA, obviously, the NBA now, as opposed to 20 years ago, is very different. And the modern NBA is big into switching. Being switchable is a really big bonus if players can do that. Now, not just initially, but down the line as well, when he has maybe matured more physically and gotten better as a player, what positions do you see Devin being able to play?
I think as far as a defender, I think he'll be able to guard the 1 through 3. I don't think that's going to be an issue because I think he's quick enough to guard, to hang with most ones and at least cause some problems. And I think he's long enough and smart enough to defend threes without putting on a decent amount of good weight and muscle to his frame. I don't know how he holds up against fours. You know, he's 6'6". I'm not sure if he's long enough to defend fours at a high clip. So 1 through 3 is where I see him defending. And then offensively, I think he's pretty versatile. He can play either the 2 or the 3. You know, anybody who wants to go with multiple wings, I think he can fit in that kind of offensive scheme as well.
I think there's a lot of teams out there that are really going to love what they see in Devin Vassell. A lot of it's going to depend too. We don't know what a pre-draft process is going to work or look like. And so that's going to really change where he's going to go, I think. Now, as we look ahead to the actual draft and where he could potentially go, where do you think he likely goes in the draft? Where do you think he should go? And is there a team or teams that you think would be a good fit?
Right now on the Babcock Hoops mock draft, we have him at number 9 to Washington. But I think a lot of where he ends up is going to do with how quickly the point guards come off the board in the top 8. So you look at Charlotte, Chicago, Detroit, and New York are teams that I think going into the draft, like, you want one of those top three point guards. I could see Cleveland taking a point guard if they want to admit that maybe they missed on some. I don't think they will. And Atlanta, I don't think you necessarily want a point guard just because you've already got Trey. Don't take the ball out of his hands. So in a world where all the guards go ahead, I could see the Knicks taking him at 8. Atlanta at 6 would be really interesting. I don't know if you want to have Herter, Reddish, Vassell, Hunter. Like, that to an extent could get a little much and clog up the wing position a little bit. So Washington to 9, or 9 to Washington, makes the most sense to us right now. If he falls to 11, I could see the Spurs getting him, and I think that's probably my favorite fit. It's actually interesting. I believe it's my favorite fit for both him and Patrick Williams from Florida State. But I think that 8-9 Knicks Wizards, likely where he goes, but I think the highest you probably see him go off the board is 6 to the Hawks.
You know, as an aside, I will say, if there's one thing I'm going to cheer for in this draft, it's that the Cavaliers take another point guard. I think that would, no matter what happens in the draft, I would leave very happy just having to watch that again.
And it's such an interesting draft for them, because with the same front office, you know, there are enough good point guards up there at the top where you could take another one and justify it. But then you have so many, you know, who gets playing time, who kind of gets pushed to the side right now when they're, you know, there's bigs at the top with Wiseman and Okongwu, but how comfortable are you taking them at the number 5 pick? It is fascinating. I don't think they'll take a guard, but if they do, like you said, I mean, I won't be shocked at all. I'll probably just throw my hands in the air and say, you know, I don't know how this is going to look, but, you know, I hope they can figure it out.
One of the interesting things too is, you know, there's an opportunity. If a LaMelo Ball was available there and they took him, I don't know that I'd want to be in Cleveland at that point, because LaMelo Ball, and given how that family aspect tends to go, I'm not sure how much he's going to be happy about being stuck in Cleveland. So that's a whole nother can of worms that they could be opening. But regardless, obviously a very important draft for the Cavaliers, just given where they're at. Now, let's jump into our second prospect that we're going to talk about, which is Patrick Williams. Now, he comes to the draft as the second youngest prospect in the class. What is most impressive is how good he already is to me at such a young age. Do you see him as a player that can contribute day one?
I do not. I think Patrick Williams is a guy that you take as a long-term play. I don't see him providing great, meaningful minutes in the NBA in year one, possibly in year two. There's enough that he'll need to adjust with the strength in his lower body to get his lower body ready to play an NBA game. He's obviously very powerful, but his mobility, his footwork, you know, his ability, his flexibility comes into question as well. So I think you'll have to work on that a little bit at the beginning. He also is a fairly slow mover. You know, a lot of what he does is methodical. He's incredibly smart, so he's making the right plays. But even as a pull-up shooter, a catch-and-shooter, handling out of the pick and then roll, it's kind of methodical. And I don't know if that's, you know, we don't want to make a mistake, or that's just how he moves and plays the game. So I think the speed of the game, he'll need a year to adjust. Not a year one contributor, but I think he's a high, high ceiling guy, and easily worth taking in the back end of the lottery.
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting point about decision making and the timing it takes to make decisions, because you're right, the speed of the game when you go from college to the NBA, number one, it's a huge jump. But at the same time, the other players that you're playing against, they've all been doing it in most cases for a while. So they've already adjusted to that. And so they're going to make the decision before you do. And so if you don't know what to do with the basketball, it's going to be tough to put you on the court. That's going to be one of those things. Does it matter what team he goes to, though? Are there teams out there? You know, we mentioned the Cavs. Are there certain teams that maybe just are going to play him more given, you know, the state of their franchise, for example?
Absolutely. And if I'm a team already in a rebuild or extremely young anyway, as soon as I take him, I put him on the floor. Like, if I'm not looking to contend next season, I put him on the floor and I get Patrick Williams as many reps as I can. You know, these spots would be a little high, but let's say you take him, the Knicks at 8, Wizards at 9, you know, Spurs at 11, even the Kings. I think the Kings will be a decent fit for him at 12 as well. I think you put him on the floor right now. Now, if he falls to Boston at 14, New Orleans at 13, or I don't see a world where he gets this far, but let's say even the Mavs down at 18. You know, I think you get him some reps, but not a lot, because A, you don't need him yet, so give him time to develop. But yeah, if you're not contending right now, go ahead and put him on the floor and get him as many reps as he can.
But you're right. If he goes to a certain team, some G League time is definitely not going to be the worst thing, because when it comes to, especially a player as young as him, you need minutes, and contenders can't necessarily guarantee that for a player like Williams, at least day one. Now, for me, when I look at Williams, one thing that really stands out to me is he has one of the best looking jump shots in the class. Solid at the free throw line, and he has shown the ability to hit the long ball as well. Do you trust his jump shot?
I do, but it will have to get a little faster, in my opinion. Like, it'll have to be quicker. He doesn't waste much movement, which is one of the reasons that I like it. You know, there's not many wasted movement. I hate wasted movement in shots because it just slows you down. It's unnecessary. It's why I think LaMelo Ball's shot is going to have to be adjusted a lot fairly early. Williams, you know, even though the numbers weren't crazy high, 32% from three, the 83.5% from the free throw line, really worried about level. I'm not predicting him to be some 38 or 39% three-point guy, but I trust it. And his form is consistent as a pull-up shooter as well, which again makes me like it. Out of the pick and roll, he's able to score, you know, going left or right, and has good footwork coming into his shot. So I buy his shooting.
And the wasted movement, I think, is a very good point. There's a lot of guys, and in this class, I could name a bunch that definitely do that. And LaMelo is an interesting one you mentioned, too, because he's a guy that's going to have a lot of work to do, because not only does he have to likely improve his mechanics, but the shot selection is another thing that player definitely needs to work on if he's going to be more efficient at the next level. Now, moving on, while Williams has shown solid defense, to me, and you kind of touched on this earlier, but I don't think he does struggle a bit to move laterally. And it sounds like, from based on what we said earlier, you would say that definitely is something that he does have to work on. And part of the reason why, depending on the team, he might not be able to get major minutes right away. Do you think eventually, though, he's going to be able to develop better body movement and be effective as an on-ball defender?
Yes, I do. Because he's such a high IQ and good feel defender. Like, I think it's just innate in him and in his basketball DNA to be a good defender. I don't think it's necessarily something you're going to have to, you know, teach him from the ground floor. Yeah. You know, his feet, you think that his hips, unlocking his flight, that's going from an average to a great defender for Williams.
Yep, unlocking that's going to make a big difference. You know, some guys, what helps, they get to that next level, they're able to work a little bit on their footwork and things of that nature, and sometimes that can really make a big difference as they make that transition. Now, he has shown some ability to push the ball in transition, as well as handle the ball, albeit limited in the half court. Ultimately, what positions do you think he'll be able to play? And in addition, will he eventually be able to guard 1 through 5, depending on the matchup? I have seen some people that think that's what his ceiling is going to be.
So I think you're looking at a kid who can play the 3 or the 4. Most of the time, I think he'll be the power forward. I think that's what you're looking at. I mean, 6'8", 225, long arms. He's a big kid. I think if you can make him quicker and you can help him with his feet, footwork, and his speed and agility, I think there are lineups where he could play the 3. But I think as a stretch 4, a slashing 4, that's probably what you're looking at as far as his role.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And most teams, you know, for example, I'm a big fan of the Wolves. I have a Wolves radio show as well. And he's a guy that I would look to if we were to draft him. I would love to see what he looked like next to Karl Towns, for example, sitting in that 4 space, especially given that's kind of what the Wolves are looking for. They're looking for someone that's kind of a toolsy 3/4 player to fit that mold of player, and he could definitely do that. And a lot of it's going to depend on the team he goes to as well. But I like that he's going to be a guy that at the next level likely will have a little bit of switchability. Very similar to what we talked about with Vassell. I think that's very important in the modern NBA. Now, Williams won sixth man of the year in the ACC as FSU was, they were very talented and, you know, they didn't have to start him and they didn't need him to play major minutes. Do you think Williams could actually end up being a little better than people realize ultimately when he gets an increased role in usage?
I do. I think where he is now is more appropriate for his ranking and what teams think of him. You know, early on in the year, all you knew is that he was a huge kid with some tools, but you really didn't know what he had in his bag. And he was mocked, you know, a lot at the back end of the first round. And as we get closer to the draft, we hear his name a lot in the, you know, back end of the lottery, as well as middle of the first. If you take him in the lottery, you really buy him as a 3-point shooter and the ability to create. I think in the mid first and even the back end of the first, you know, you're comfortable with a guy who can play multiple and defend multiple positions on defense and provide a little bit of offense. So if somebody takes him really high, they're buying the offensive versatility and ability to maintain a usage rate that provides a lot of points. And what else he has going for him, obviously, is the age. Like, teams want youth because it gives them time to develop. You look at Patrick Williams right now. I mean, he's so young and you already see the tools he has. You imagine him at 25, 26 years old. I mean, if you get his lower body right, you could have an absolute stud on your hands. So I think somewhere in that 10, probably the 10 to 18, I don't think I see him fall into 20. That 10 to maybe 16 or 18 range is where I expect Williams to fall.
And I think that's fair. I'd be pretty surprised if a team in the top 10 was to take a chance of Williams, although I could understand it just because of the talent. And like you mentioned, the age, to me, that really sets him apart from some of the other prospects. But yeah, when you're getting to that end of the lottery, kind of mid first round, I think there's a lot of teams that would really like to have him on that roster. And it makes a lot of sense. He's got a very high ceiling as a prospect. And what's really helped, I think, too, even after the season was cut short, even at that point, I felt like his stock was lower than it is now. I think he's benefited from this extended period of being able to watch prospects and players because people are to dive into that film even more and say to themselves, this is a guy I really like. And so I can understand why he has definitely moved up a lot of draft boards. All right, so want to touch one more thing on Williams. We obviously talked about where he's going to likely go, the section of the draft that we think he makes the most sense. But is there a team or teams in this draft that you said to yourself, right, I really like the fit for Williams with what they have?
So at Babcock Hoops right now in our mock draft, we have him 11 to the Spurs. And honestly, I believe that that's my favorite fit. If you look at their roster, they have White, Murray, Johnson, Walker as well for their young core. I think power forward or center is a good position for them to address in this class. And I think Williams fits that great. New Orleans at 13, Boston at 14, and Portland at 16. I think those are the fits where I look and I'm like, okay, there's a nice combination of I can let you develop, but there's also a role for you within like 2 or 3 years if I need you. Boston may be hard to see the floor because they're already so like wing and they've got such ball dominant guys already. But again, his ability to, as a catch and shooter, I think although they're not the same player, a PJ Tucker like role from a corner three specialist perspective could be good for him. And I look at Boston, I'm like, man, if you've got Brown and Tatum and Kemba driving, you know, putting Williams at that four spot in 2 or 3 years is just a beautiful thing. So I think 11 to San Antonio, 13 to New Orleans, who's just raking in all the talent they have right now, and then 14 to Boston. Those are where I would really like to see him go.
As a Wolves fan, I'll tell you this. Let's not send him to the Pelicans. The Celtics can have him in the East, or let's let him drop to 17 here at the Wolves. That would be ideal for me. Now, before I let you go, I do want to touch a little bit on Trent Forrest, who obviously isn't as highly touted of a prospect, but there's still a lot to like about his game, especially defensively. Where are you at with Trent Forrest as a prospect?
So Forrest is really interesting. I don't see him getting drafted because, you know, we just haven't heard his name brought up from a lot of teams. 28% from three, nothing really to hold on to there. But at 6'4", 210, he's a reliable, mature point of guard. And I think there's a role for him. I think that he deserves a G League deal right immediately following the draft if he does not If he doesn't get selected, I think a two-way role would be an opportunity for him. Again, he's not the flashiest guy, but he just does the little things well. He can post up smaller guards because of his strength, you know, good playmaker, and decent scorer off the dribble. So I love his mentality. I love that he's a mature guy, and I trust him as a decision maker. So I'd actually really like Forrest to get a shot at the NBA.
To me, if you're a team, especially a younger team, I think he'd be the perfect guy to target as an undrafted free agent to grab as a two-way prospect. Because number one, as a defender, he's one of the better defenders in this class. When you look at his block rate, look at his steal percentage, you don't see too many players coming out in any of the recent classes that put up the numbers that he did on the defensive end. Of course, you look at the offensive end, there's definitely more question marks. I like him in terms of his ability to hit floaters, and there's certain aspects of his game offensively, but there's a reason why we're talking about him at the end of the second or likely not being drafted, because he does have holes in his game.
Right, and I think a big part is the age too. When you have a four-year guy coming out of school, teams don't necessarily look at these players with an upside kind of view anymore. And that's fine. You know, you want to bet on youth. So him being a senior, I won't say it, you know, it's not going to help his case, but I think the maturity, you can flip that almost and look, okay, the maturity, he's used to being able to, you know, being a leader both on the floor, off the floor, and on both sides of the ball. So I would absolutely take a shot on him if I was somebody.
And leadership is one of those things that you see that with a lot of centers or a lot of seniors where they jump in and they've been in that leadership role. And I do think that's something that can definitely help certain teams, that you could have a guy that has that leadership, that has that high IQ, and then you add in the good defense, and it's probably worth taking a shot as a two-way prospect, a guy that maybe eventually turns into more. I talked to, you know, in my interview with Leonard Hamilton, he mentioned how the one thing that you can really get guys to get better at the next level is shooting. You can't always get a guy to play defense. And so when you have someone that can already step in day one and play some defense, I do think that's a prospect that's worth taking a chance on as a two-way guy, because maybe he grows into a larger role. And if he figures out a jump shot, who knows? Maybe he ends up being a solid backup point guard, a role player of some sort. You definitely have some options there. Now, before I let you go, I want to end with this, give you a chance to tell people how they can follow you on social media, and then let the listeners know if you have any articles or content that you have released recently or that's coming out soon.
Absolutely. So my Twitter is dmurraynba, dmurraynba. But if you don't follow me, please follow Matt Babcock and Babcock Hoops. We're always trying to put out fresh stuff. We just interviewed a couple players in the last couple weeks. We've interviewed Cassius Stanley, Isaiah Stewart, Grant Riller, Lamar Stevens. And then I put out a piece on Jaden McDaniels and Tyrell Terry, really diving into their game. Have another one coming out next week as well. And we're going to try to get into some workouts pretty soon. So we're always trying to stay up with the draft and provide teams and fans and media, kind of everybody, with the latest up-to-date information. So if you don't follow me, follow those accounts and be sure to check us out.
I definitely encourage our listeners to definitely check out all your content, because it's very high level, it's very well informed, and some really good prospects to have on interviews that you listed off there. So definitely take a look and have a listen. Thanks again, Derek, for taking the time to join us, and hopefully we can have you on again down the line in the future.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it very much. Thank you for thinking of me. And hey, as soon as the draft happens, you know, we're all going to have our both knee-jerk reactions and our well-thought-out reactions. So I am happy to share both if you guys would have me back. So thank you very much.
All right, welcome back to the Robin Hoop Draft Show on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. And now we have the pleasure to be joined by, from the Prospect Podcast, Ethan Piotta. Ethan, thanks for taking the time to join us.
Appreciate you having me on.
So the focus this week is on Florida State, and there are a number of really good prospects from that school. And today what we're going to touch on is Trent Forrest. When you think of Trent Forrest, what is it that you really initially comes to mind about him as a prospect?
You know, Trent Forrest is a guy I've been pretty high on him, contrary to others. I thought he's just someone that hasn't been really talked about enough in draft circles and whatnot. And I think the first thing you really think of when you're talking about Trent Forrest is his defense. This guy's an absolute animal. on the defensive side of the ball, especially at the point of attack on the perimeter. I remember even watching, I think it was the biggest game that stood out for me this year watching Forrest was against Duke earlier in the year. I believe he had almost 7 steals at halftime against Trey Jones and company against Duke, which kind of just highlights how tenacious and how game-changing he is on that side of the floor.
Yeah, that game was very, very impressive. I think he finished with 18 points, 8 steals. I mean, there were so many things to like about him in that game and in other games too, because if you look statistically, as far as not only just steal percentage, but block percentage too, it's pretty rare you see someone that's able to put up the numbers that he has put up. In fact, I believe I heard someone recently talking about how the only prospect in recent memory that's done that, I think, was D'Anthony Melton was like, I think, the only player that had a similar percentage as far as those statistics are concerned. So, I mean, defensively, he should be able to jump in immediately with a team, whether it's as a two-way guy, whether it's as, you know, some sort of a bench role. Defensively, he can definitely make an impact on day one.
Absolutely. That's going to be the number one thing for Forrest is, like you said, day one, he's going to be ready to make an impact defensively. He's already got an NBA-ready body. There's not much filling out for him to do. I believe he's listed as like around 6'4", 210, maybe probably 6'3". So this is a guy that's going to be able to hold his own defensively. I like the Melton comparison too, just in terms of the, you know, statistically, because from a physical comparison and a kind of play style comparison as well, especially in college, obviously Melton had the ball in his hands a little bit more than Forrest did, but defensively they have quite a few similarities. And I think a lot of people are super high on a guy like, you know, D'Anthony Melton nowadays because he brings really high-level defense at the guard position, which is becoming increasingly more important in the NBA, especially with teams kind of shifting towards a lot of drop, pick, and roll coverage. Guards like Melton, guards like maybe even Forrest one day that can, you know, apply great on-ball pressure, can get through screens with ease, can stick to their guy, and kind of eliminate that in-between game and help out their center in every way possible, because often these guards are just so isolated, you know, running through screens. Guys like Forrest and Melton and other defensive first guards are becoming increasingly more important, which is why, which kind of explains the bulk of why I'm so high on Forrest.
The interesting thing to me is, I feel like when you're really good offensively, people don't judge you the same way as they do if you're really good defensively. So when you look at a prospect, a good example would be Obi Toppin. Obi Toppin is a terrible defender, but there's so many people that are willing to just be like, oh, don't worry about that. Just pretend that didn't happen. Let's just look at the offensive game. But when you take a guy that's just really, really good defensively, all of a sudden everyone goes, well, I mean, he's just not very good. And that's what's crazy to me about when you think about what's important in today's NBA, because you can't tell me that defense isn't important. Yet there's so many evaluators out there that are willing to brush aside guys like Trent Forrest just because they don't have as good of an overall game.
Right, exactly. It's just, I think I've always gone by the philosophy too that it's way harder to play with, to succeed with someone that has extreme defensive deficiencies compared to someone that doesn't have a lot to do offensively, because there's a number of ways you can get involved offensively that don't include scoring, whether that's setting a screen, whether that's, you know, knocking down an open shot or making a smart ghost cut or anything, you know, of that nature. Defensively, I mean, you can try to hide someone in the NBA on arguably the worst offensive player, but it doesn't really work like that. And so obviously we're getting on a little bit of a tangent here, but with Forrest, defensively is where you're going to get, you know, his for sure effort and overall ability. That the bulk of his game, you know, defensively is going to come right away to the NBA. He's going to be able to translate and make plays on that side of the ball. And offensively, I mean, he's not a lost cause either. You're talking about a guy that if, you know, he's able to develop his three-point shot a little bit more, and he's made some strides over his career at Florida State, you know, not anything – exponential or something that, you know, would jump off the page, but going from you know, about 21% his first real season that he was playing big time minutes to now 28% does show a little bit of growth. I'd like to see him get to that, you know, 30s low range in the NBA to become at least, you know, willing to shoot from that distance, and I think that adds a lot of value to his game if he's just, you know, able to knock down an open three-point shot or two.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing is, in his four-year career, he barely ever shot three-pointers. It just wasn't something that was a big part of his game. Now, again, it's a low percentage of shots that he takes there, but it's also a low percentage that he's hitting. Now, when you look at a player in college and you say, all right, is he going to translate as a shooter? Well, we've seen him improve, you know, from year one to year four from the free throw line. You know, he's sitting at 82, 83% from the free throw line. So it isn't like you're saying to yourself, all right, well, this guy's shooting, you know, 60% from the free throw line, in addition to having the issue where you don't see him shoot much. And when he does, it doesn't go in. So to me, at least there's some sort of like a building block there as far as free throw shooting is concerned. It's, you know, his form is a little goofy. If you watch him shoot from the free throw line, it's not ideal, but it's not terrible. You know, we're not sitting here going, all right, this is Shaq, right? This isn't a guy that he has a good base. And so to me, he comes in as such a high level defender. I think that granted, he's a slightly older prospect, but there's no reason why he can't get better shooting wise. There's a lot of prospects that want to get better on defense. You just don't see that very often, but guys improving their shot, that happens all the time. And so when I look at him, I do think that he's going to be able to make those improvements to be a little more effective. And you touched on how it's not like he's, you know, some sort of a scrub on the offensive end. He's got some really nice pieces to his game. He's a decent finisher. He's got a really good floater. I believe he was in around the 90th percentile as far as the floater game is concerned and being effective there. So he brings some pieces to the table that I do think an NBA team is going to see and say, all right, he's good enough on offense where we're going to take him because we want that defense.
Yeah, upper 90th percentile, I believe, as well in transition offense, which kind of shows, you know, when he's able to get into the open floor, the number one thing about Forrest is he's going to flash his athleticism. I think my favorite play the entire year from him was, I believe, against Louisville, one of the last games of the season, really. And he just dunked all over Jordan Wara at the very end of that game. I mean, he's an athletic freak when he gets into the open floor. I think that's also valuable for an NBA team, especially if he's able to play alongside kind of a ball dominant guard and then improve himself, improve his value off the ball. Obviously shooting goes with it. And you mentioned he's got some building blocks there. I think, you know, the indicators are there in terms of free throw percentage, in terms of floater touch. And we're kind of just waiting on, you know, seeing the volume increase and maybe a few tweaks to his mechanics. Like you said, mechanics aren't all that bad. They're not exactly where you'd want them to be, especially in the upper body. But, you know, if tweaks are made, we're not talking about Forrest being an eventual 40% three-point shooter. I think he can be a touch below league average, and that would make a major difference and really rise his value on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, if he could give me, you know, 35%, which I don't think that's asking for too much, but if you could get somewhere in that like mid-30s, I think that's passable. And when you add that to the skills he already possesses, that makes him, to me, a very valuable player in today's NBA. Now, when you look at other parts of his game, you know, we've obviously touched on the defense. We've touched on the offense. One thing that, you know, I talked to his coach about is he's just a fantastic, not only a locker room guy, a great person, but he's a really good leader. And that's one thing that I don't think can be undersold, because when it comes to having smart players, you want guys that are not only smart, but are able to help out the other guys on the court. And that's something that he's shown he's been able to do. So what are your thoughts on him in terms of the fact that he brings that to the table? I feel like that adds even more value to a player that maybe some people look at as a red flag, you know, his age, but with that age also comes someone that's a little more seasoned.
Right. You can never have enough of those locker room guys, those guys that can make an impact off the floor. And although many scouts probably would consider one of, you know, Forrest's downside to be his age, his experience is pretty crazy as well. He's probably seen a lot. He's got a lot of basketball experience from all of his years at Florida State. And so I think that could potentially be a positive in the long run, especially if you're talking about a guy, this isn't someone that you're building around by any means, obviously. This is a guy that is probably going to come in and best case scenario be on a two-way deal for a team and then make an impact down the line. And, you know, coaches, especially in the NBA, rely and gravitate towards guys that can kind of fit into any situation, any mold, any opportunity at any time they're ready to go. I think Forrest is one of those guys to where if he was given an opportunity to have playoff minutes one day and he hadn't played a lot during the regular season, he'd be able to step in and be a positive and succeed in some realm, in some facet of the game, because, you know, that's really just a testament to his experience and to a guy like Leonard Hamilton, who a lot can't say they played under for 5 years. That's invaluable experience.
Yeah, the interesting thing, when I was talking to Leonard Hamilton on this week's show, he brought up a really good point. And this is crazy to me, but that Trent Forrest is the winningest basketball player in the history of Florida State basketball. That's something that I was not aware of. And then he also mentioned how he was, a 3,000-point scorer in high school. So he's a guy that's he wins at a high level. He plays really, really smart basketball, high IQ player. There's a lot of teams out there that could use someone that fits that build.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty crazy that he's Leonard's most, you know, winningest player. And that does come with a lot of the time that he spent there at Florida State as well, and all the really successful teams he's been on. But I think, you know, we go back to it. I think the game experience that he has, the basketball experience that he's gained over the years are going to be more positive than negative. Probably one of the biggest downsides on Forrest is kind of how old he is. I think that shouldn't really be as, you know, much of into consideration as some scouts are taking it into in terms of just completely taking him off the board altogether.
Yeah, and there are some people that I've seen that have pretty much taken him off their board. You know, you'll see him in, let's say, the 80s or 90s. And at that point, that's a guy that, you know, that's likely not getting drafted in that person's eyes. To me, I do look at him as a player that I think could be drafted in that late second round, but it's also one of those things where there's some really talented players that are available in those UDFA molds that transfer into two-way prospects for teams. A good example of that, and a guy that's actually shined in his role, is Naz Reid with the Timberwolves, who, you know, had a season that wasn't as good as people expected. He ended up not getting drafted, and a team takes a chance on him, and he shines. And so if you can find the right role for a guy like Trent Forrest, and sure, maybe that's going to be starting in the G League or things like that, you definitely could build him into the prospect you want him to be. Now, we touched a little bit on his shooting woes. One concern I do have is he doesn't have a great passing ability, I would say. And when we saw this past year his usage rate go up, so did his turnovers. And you were talking about, you know, around 3 turnovers a game. To me, that's an area of his game where I do have a little bit of concern.
Absolutely. And we're talking about a guy, essentially, the strides that he makes offensively aren't going to be enough to make him a complete offensive positive at probably any point in his career, unless he's just in the perfect system. So it doesn't worry me, you know, stats like that as much. Obviously, you'd like to see his turnover rate go down when his usage goes up. Honestly, in the role that he should be in the NBA, it doesn't concern me as much, because we're talking about a guy that ideally should be playing alongside another guard that's ball dominant. I think that's probably the best, you know, way for Trent Forrest to succeed. And that comes with him having to make major improvements to his game off the ball, in terms of, like we talked about, shooting and some of the other areas.
Yep. I think that's very, very fair. You have to draft him, or let's say you grab him in free agency, you have to grab him and you have to set your expectations accordingly. And you have to know what you're getting in a prospect like him. I feel like sometimes teams draft a prospect and they want him to be someone that he's not. And so with a guy like Trent Forrest, as long as you have your expectations set accordingly, I do think he could succeed in the right system. And that kind of brings us to kind of the last question I want to ask you here about Trent. As we look ahead to the draft, do you think he likely gets drafted? Do you think he should get drafted? And is there a team out there that you think could maybe be a good fit that fits the role that you see him playing?
I'm personally on the board of, I think he should definitely be in consideration to be drafted. And if he's not drafted, he should be one of the first UDFAs picked up. Absolutely. I personally, from all the intel I've gathered and from what I've seen and been told, I do not think he's going to be a name that's going to be called in the NBA draft. But, I mean, man, a team is going to get one heck of a player as a UDFA if they're able to pick up Trent Forrest, I think. And that, you know, him starting in the G League isn't going to be some detriment on his career either. That's where he should start. I'd personally love to see him get picked up by the Hawks. And it's funny, you mentioned the D'Anthony Melton comparison too. That's kind of a guy that a lot of Hawks fans want to see go to the Hawks this summer, is D'Anthony Melton. I think putting a guy like Forrest in a few years, if he's able to develop and he's able to, you know, translate well, like I think he will defensively, you know, pairing him with Trey Jones Trey Young could be extremely interesting in the future in Atlanta. I think when you get a defensive-minded guard and you pair him with an offensive-minded guard, it's a really nice blend. It's a really nice mesh because you can play them some minutes on the court, and you can also get a different look with lineups and whatnot. Taking Trey off opposing point guards maybe in the future if he was able to turn out like that, I think would be a real benefit to his game. And obviously that's something that's going to have to come with time. It's not something that we're going to be seeing from day one with Trent Forrest. But if he's able to develop off the ball, if he's able to develop the shot, he's able to be successful in different roles on the offensive side of the ball, I think then the defensive part comes easy and you kind of slot him into various different roles. I think any really team with a ball-dominant, offensive-minded, score-first point guard would be really doing themselves a service if they look into Trent Forrest to pair with that guard.
Yeah, and I will say, although it was a slip, I would actually enjoy seeing him playing with Trey Jones. That would actually be kind of fun. Two of the best guard, right, you know, defensive guard prospects in the class. I think you could do a lot worse than having those two guys on your team. So before we let you go, let people know where they can find you on social media and if you have anything coming out soon or what's something that came out recently as far as the Prospect Podcast.
Yes, you can follow me on social media at Ethan Piotta. You can follow the Prospect Podcast at Prospect Pod. We're available on pretty much every single platform and right here on Dash Radio. So make sure to tune in. We've got some great episodes, some great guests that we're hoping to bring on. Leading up to the NBA draft, it's been a really long road. Still about a month and a half left, which is pretty crazy. So I'm personally right now, I'm trying to get into the mode of not over evaluating, not watching too much extra film, because I kind of feel like I have a really good grip on a lot of these guys, and so I don't want to overthink my evaluations, my initial evaluations, because normally we really wouldn't have this time. But yeah, stay tuned. We're gonna have a lot of great content coming out in the next month or so.
Excellent. Glad to hear it. And we'll talk again soon. Have a good one.
Thank you.
I want to start by saying thank you to all of our guests this week. And I encourage all of our listeners to go check them out where they mentioned they are available on social media or on their specific websites. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Robin Hoop NBA Draft Show here on Dash Radio's Nothing But Net channel. Remember, you can find us anywhere podcasts are found, whether that's Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher. You can find us at any of those locations. Again, Robin Hoop Draft Show, bringing rich takes to the poorly informed. And until next week, we'll see you.
With the first pick in the 2003 NBA Draft, the Cleveland Cavaliers select LeBron James.
With the 13th pick in the 1996 NBA Draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Kobe Bryant.
With the first pick in the 2015 NBA Draft,
with the third pick in the 2018 NBA Draft,
with the first pick in the 1998 NBA Draft,
the Los Angeles Clippers select the Orlando Magic.
Michael Olcandy from the University.
Kyrie Irving from Duke University.
With the first pick in the 2019 NBA Draft, the New Orleans Pelicans select Zion Williamson from Duke University.